and welcome to this week's message from Valley Church. Catch up on more messages and hear the latest from Valley Church online at valleychurch.eu/messages or download from iTunes. For more information about what's going on in the life of church, visit valleychurch.eu. Enjoy the message.
So the last couple of months for my wife and I, our family really have been quite extraordinary. Even this morning, I woke up. It's been quite an emotional morning, and I woke up to a text. Turned my phone on as I normally do on a Sunday morning, get the normal reports from team back home. But I get a text to say that one of my friends that I play golf with had a heart attack yesterday and died. And I'm not sure whether he died while he was playing golf, but he was certainly up at Glen Eagles for a golfing weekend. And then a couple of minutes after that, I get another text from an old friend I haven't seen for quite a few years. We used to live together and lodge together and do youth ministry together. And he texts me to say, "Hey, have you got such and such girl in your church? Because she sent my daughter a text, and my daughter has been having suicidal thoughts and was contemplating suicide, and she just sent her a text, and it changed everything. So can you just thank this girl from me?" You sort of have all these conflicting emotions going around within the space of a couple of moments. And last Saturday, we buried my wife's father. He was a great man. He wasn't out there. He didn't build huge churches. He was a pastor. He was a missionary in Thailand. But when you look at greatness, you would think, no. But actually, he's got four kids that love Jesus, a lot of grandchildren. He's got a wife that adores him, and churches that have sprung up in Thailand that were never there before he was there. And people came from all over the world to say, "Thank you, Jack." I guess, an ordinary man, but an extraordinary man and great at the same time. My wife has been ill, and we still don't know definitely what's wrong with her. We think it's lupus. At one time, we thought it was leukemia, so we went through all the emotions of that. My son had a knife pulled on him at school, and then to top it all off, our boiler broke down. Our boiler broke down. That's the thing that upsets me the most at the moment. But then I went to hospital a couple of weeks ago, and I went to see an old friend of mine, and he's part of our church, and him and his wife had twin boys. And the twin boys were born 24 weeks. They were born at 24 weeks. And it was an incredible thing, and they pretty much gave them no chance of survival whatsoever. And I went to see them a few weeks ago, and it was the week when they were supposed to be born, and they are healthy. An incredible thing, you know, to see them. One of them's got a few complications, is still on a bit of oxygen. He comes into church, and the mum and dad have got the oxygen bottle and everything. But the reality is they're alive, and they are a miracle. And then a few weeks ago, I had the privilege of going to Audacious Church for the Hope for Justice conference and being part of that, where one of my friends who, you know, he started Hope for Justice and has seen it grown into something that's right across the world. And for me, you know, over the past couple of months, I've had the full range of emotions. You know, you go through grief. We watched my father-in-law be buried and watch him go through old age and sickness. And then this morning as well, the text from my friend, it's like, even in that one text, you have just the heartbreak of a daughter contemplating suicide. I think, whoa, don't even know how that would feel as a dad. But then to have someone just speak a word of encouragement into your daughter's life and change that. You know, she's still got a process to go through. And it's like, my girl is the same age as her. You know, and you have all of that going on. You have the anger of seeing what's happening as as Ben brought his Hope for Justice reports from across the world, the anger of human trafficking. But within that hope as well, you have rejoicing, helplessness, strength. And then we see what's going on close to home in terms of Brexit, the protests for, the protests against. And I don't care how you voted. I don't care what you think. But what's happening in the country that we love? Emotions are running high. Anger is rife at the moment. And both sides of the debate feel they're right. And both sides of the debate feel that the only thing that matters is getting everything that we demand. We have terrorists causing devastation. And I just looked at the headlines this morning, just on the BBC News app. Trump, because we all care what he thinks. Prepare for no deal and send in Farage. Wow, there you go. Joshua beating in one of boxing's biggest upsets. Uncovering Pakistan's human rights abuses. Kill Tory bands to play Glastonbury. China defends Tiananmen crackdown in rare comments. Protester grabs mic from US presidential hopeful. Shameful funeral sale tactics target. And it goes on. Footballer Neymar denies trouble with English this morning. Denies rape accusation. Man, it's just incredible what's happening at the moment. And so all of this, all of the stuff that's going on, even with our own lives, with our own emotions, circumstances outside of us. What's our foundation? As followers of Christ, what is our foundation? And how do we stay fully engaged with the world around us, deal with our own emotions at times, yet still have something to say to the world that we live in? How can we speak peace to our own world? And in reality, do we have anything to say? And within that, my question is, how can we change the narrative? How can we change? I don't think we're ever going to change the lurid headlines, but how can we change the narrative within ourselves, firstly, but within our neighbors and friends? Today, I actually want to talk about joy. You see, the Bible is about changing our experience, changing our future, changing our relationship, and then from that, being able to change our narrative, change the story that we are able to tell. Isaiah 61 talks about this. It says, "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news." See, we just read through the headlines, haven't we? Good news headlines don't sell newspapers. They don't get repeats, retweets. They don't get people reading them. But we are here to proclaim good news, to change the narrative of everything that we hear around us. He sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, and release from darkness for the prisoners. Again, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, and to provide for those who grieve in Zion, and bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. They will be called the oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. You see, proclaim the good news, it says there. Tell the story of the good news that brings change. The oil of joy instead of mourning. So what's your story? Maybe even this morning you've had stuff going on. Maybe you've come here and some of the experience that I've talked about, some of the emotions are what you are going through right at this moment. Grief, loss, pain, uncertain future, rejection, divorce, failure. Maybe that's your narrative. That's your story. Can I say, it's just a snapshot. You see, just because it's your story here in this moment, in this season, maybe, doesn't mean to say it's the whole narrative. Anthony Joshua lost last night. And it's amazing when I was reading and listening to the interviews, it's like, he lost, that's it for him, it's over, you know, he was the heavyweight boxing champion of the world and now he's been beaten by an unknown. No, hold on a second. He lost. He lost one match. See, all champions lose. But he's proclaimed a loser. That's now his narrative. And he has the choice whether that becomes his story or whether it's just part of his story. Psalm 30 says that weeping comes in the night, but joy comes in the morning. There will be times when we weep, appropriately so, and sometimes inappropriately. But joy comes in the morning. Part of my story is a few years ago, we went through a season where people left church. Not everyone left, you know, but it wasn't a large majority. It was only a small percentage. But as a pastor, you still grieve the loss. You're losing people that God has given us responsibility for. God has given us shepherding oversight for. And I was grieving the loss of the people that left. And after a while, we'd come through and I felt challenged by God when someone read out the scripture and it says this, it's Song of Solomon 2, 11 and 12. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on earth, the time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. You see, that season, the challenge for me was, you're still grieving the loss of winter, and you're missing the new growth of summer. I was still looking at the death of relationships and friendships that had gone, people that had gone, and I was actually missing all these new people coming into church, people making decisions, people whose lives were being changed, people being baptized, but I was still in mourning for the loss of the last season. And it's almost like God slapped me and said, hey, look what you're missing in your grief, and your grief needs to end. You see, it was time to change my narrative. It was a time for joy. I'm reading to prepare today's message, and this is a message that I've already preached in my church a few weeks ago, but as I was reading round and looking at the subject of joy and grief and the emotions, and I came across this online debate. You don't go down there. It's just not even worth it. But there's always people that have an opinion, isn't there? And there was talk about Jesus being a man of joy, and some people say, no, he wasn't a man of joy, because it says that he was a man acquainted with grief and sorrow. He was obviously a Newcastle fan. A man of sorrows. But they forgot that wasn't the whole story. You see, Isaiah 54 says, break forth into joy, O barren woman. It goes on and talks about breaking forth into joy, expanding, moving forward. They hadn't read Hebrews 1 verse 9 where it says, you love justice and hate evil. Therefore, O God, your God has anointed you, pouring out the oil of joy on you more than on anyone else. This is talking about Jesus. They're saying Jesus was more joyful than anyone else known. Yes, Jesus was acquainted with grief. There was a season in his life where it was, you know, he sweat drops of blood. But he was a man of joy more than anyone else. Hebrews 12 verse 2 talks about for the joy set before him. There was a joyfulness that Jesus pursued that enabled him to go through the grief, that enabled him to go through the emotions that he was facing right at that time. There was something in front. People forgot that parents wanted their kids around Jesus. You don't take your kids to some miserable old so-and-so, do you? Go and see him. He's miserable. spend some time with him. You just need calming down. No, no. Parents brought their kids so that Jesus would bless them, so that he would place his hands on them and speak life into them. There must have been something attractive about Jesus that parents wanted their kids to be with him. People wanted him at their parties. All the, you know, it talks about the sinners and the tax collectors and the people of ill repute wanted Jesus around them. They were there having fun. They're not going to want someone there who's going to spoil their fun. They wanted Jesus to be around them because there was something joyful about Jesus. Jesus's joy was not based on his personal circumstances, because they weren't great. When you look at the world then, it was completely unstable. The Jewish people were overrun by the Romans. They were living in not slavery, but in subjugation. So there was nothing great about the societal circumstances of the Jews at that time. So what was his joy based on? And therefore, what should our joy be based on as well? I believe it comes, we can see it. We can see it right at the beginning of Jesus' ministry, but also there's a similar circumstances at the end of Jesus' ministry. But Matthew 3 verse 17 says this, and a voice from heaven said, this is my son, whom I love, and in him I am well pleased. My son. God is speaking over Jesus' relationship. This is my son. There was a relationship. There was a relational connection with the Father that Jesus had. This is my son. And then it says, I love. Jesus knew not only was there a relational connection, but within that relational connection, he was loved. I am an ex-child protection social worker. I have seen lots of relationships where there is no love. Jesus knew that not only is he my father, but I am loved by him. And then God goes on to say, and in him I am well pleased. He accepts him. You know, a lot of kids know they're loved. They just don't know they're accepted and liked. And as parents, we need to make sure that not only do we tell our kids that we love them, but we actually like them. As a parent, I have to love you. Thanks, Dad. That really helps me. No, no, I like you. I like being around you. I like your smile. I accept you. I accept you at your worst and I accept you at your best. You see, Jesus's joy was based on relationship. It was based on knowing that he was loved, and it was based on knowing that he was accepted as well. Joy does not come from circumstances, society, or a prosperous future. It comes from relationship, love, and acceptance. See, we were firstly created for relationship with God, and then we were created for relationship with each other. I don't know if you've ever thought about it in this way, but the first thing that God says is not good is the fact that man was alone. But let's get deeper. See, Adam had God. But God said, that's not good enough. I just need Jesus. My Christian walk is just about me and Jesus. Really? Then go back to Genesis and God said, it's not good. It's not good for you to be alone. So he created relationship between us. It wasn't just about man and wife. It was about community. You see, our relationship is firstly with God, but secondly with each other. Joy comes from having relationship with God and relationship with each other. This word shalom that you might have heard of is not just it means peace, but it's not just about a lack of war. It's actually about community, a prospering community. So joy comes from our restored relationship with our Creator, and secondly, a restored relationship with our co-created, with each other. That's why That's why church was created. It's not an organization. There are organizational aspects to how we do church, but church is a community. Jesus himself created church. It wasn't our idea. You see, we're not called to just be Jesus and me. We're called to be Jesus and we. It's a relationship that we have with each other. We are interconnected. The joy of my salvation is the next thing I want to talk about. Jesus sends out his disciples and they come back and they're going, whoa, you should see what we did. There was manifestations and demons were coming out of people and they were scared of us and it was awesome. It was fantastic, Jesus. We did what you asked, and Jesus went, yay. But that's not the thing that you need to be happy and joyful about. He says, rejoice that your names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. What the heck is the Lamb's Book of the Life, the disciples are saying? See, the Lamb's Book of Life, let me explain it this way from my background. One of the greatest things, as a social worker, there's a lot of, I was going to swear, but I won't. There's a lot of stuff that you have to deal with. Okay, I've seen some stuff that you never, ever want to have in your life. But one of the greatest things is about taking a child and parents to court and having the child fully adopted into that family. See, and the judge, and it's an incredible moment where the judge stamps adopted. That adoption means that they are fully part of the family. The Lamb's Book of Life is the judge stamping on that certificate, fully, totally part of the family. See, Jesus takes us before God and he said, hey, these are now part of the family, and the judge stamps adopted. Adopted means that they receive every single part of the inheritance that a birth child receives as well. We are legally his son. We legally have every access and right to the inheritance. So we rejoice. Jesus says, don't rejoice because you have authority over the demons. Rejoice because your name means that your name is in the Lamb's Book of Life. You are part of the family. Because now God can say to you, it's my kid. I love him. And I like them. I like being around them. You see, the same thing that God said over Jesus' life, we have every right to hear him say it over our life. This is my daughter. I love her. I am well pleased. So obviously God's black. I'm well pleased, isn't he? I'm legally his child. I am loved. And I am accepted. You see, salvation is about a renewed relationship. And joy comes from that relationship. Problem is that as followers of Christ, we can forget our joy, can't we? We can forget, we can go through seasons like I did. And, you know, I was missing the things that should make me joyful and continue all through my period as a pastor. I've always loved seeing people make a decision to follow Jesus. I am not an evangelist, okay? Some people like Chris Kane. You know Chris? Yeah, Jay John, they're awesome. They get on a plane, they sit down, by the, you know, 2 hours later, the whole plane is speaking in tongues, they've been baptized, and it's like, you know, everyone is now a follower of Christ on that plane. I get on a plane, I put my headphones in. It's like, don't talk to me. Don't look at me. Don't put your arm on my armrest. I'm watching something. I'm not an evangelist, but you see, there's something that happens in me. When, and we're going to do it here in this service, when we make time for people to say, yeah, this Jesus that you're talking about, this Jesus that I see, I want to know him. And for you here in this moment, if you're going, yeah, I have no idea what he's talking about, but I want what he's got and I want what these people have. All you're doing is making the first step. When you put your hand up, you don't have to know the end of the journey. You just have to go, I want what they've got. That's it. See, and that does something in me. It's an incredible thing. But the problem is that I'd allowed things to get in the way. I'd allowed the death. I'd allowed broken relationship. I'd allowed the loss to get in the way of the joy of not only my salvation, but other people's salvation. The problem is that we can allow time to diminish joy. How many of you have been followers of Christ for maybe more than 20 years? You see, we should be the most joyful people on the face of the planet. We should be. We're not, though, are we really? Let's be honest. Sometimes my life is more like an elder brother in the story of the prodigal son. Obviously, I'm the only one. You guys are so spiritually mature. You're awesome. But you see, the more we go, the more along the road of salvation that we go, the more like Jesus that we should become. But the problem is, the more that we move away from our moment of salvation, the more we forget about it. And we actually need to come back to our own moment and remember, God, I remember what you did for me. I remember that you picked me up when I was most broken. I remember the fact when I walked into church, I was broken, I was lost. And I heard the good news. I heard the change in narrative. And God, you saved me. You see, and if you can't remember that, and I'm speaking particularly to older Christians right at this moment, if you can't remember that, you know what you need to do? Get around someone who's just been saved. Get around them. And as much as you can teach them something, you learn from them. Get around them and go, remind me of how I was. Remind me of those feelings, those emotions that I had when I first met Jesus, because I want to remember. I want to get back to the joy of my salvation. We allow sin to cover it. See, we sin, don't we? We understand God's grace, but sometimes it's just like, it just begins to cover us. And we keep hold of that sin rather than allowing Jesus to wash it away. And we allow sin to cover the joy of our salvation. We allow circumstances to hide it. The stuff that we go through, redundancy, death, loss, financial difficulties, flipping boiler breaking down. We allow circumstances to hide it. Maybe we allow, like the elder brother in the story of the prodigal son, we allow entitlement to cover it, to reduce it. He was angry at the celebration and the joy over his brothers coming home. Where's my party? I'm entitled to a party. And the father's going, but you were here all the time. Everything I have is yours. Yeah, but where's my celebration? You could have had one any time you wanted. Maybe for some of you, your prayer, like the prayer of David, restore unto me the joy of my relationship with you, God. See, notice he didn't say, restore to me my salvation. This is the time when, there's probably not too many of us in here that have committed adultery and then murdered someone. If you have, see Pastor Ed. You see, David didn't say, restore to me my salvation. Did you notice that? He said, restore to me the joy of my salvation. Remind me of the joy of my relationship. Because that's what salvation is. It's not just what we're saved from, it's what we're saved into. Restore to me the joy of my relationship with you, God. A joy based on relationship, a joy based on being loved, and a joy based on being accepted. See, I love this film, Inside Out. Probably watched it 4 or 5 times, once with the kids. But this character is called Joy. It's not true. It's happiness. There's nothing wrong with being happy, and there's nothing wrong with the character, but you see, joy is not based on circumstances. Joy is based on relationship, love, and acceptance. And we can go through the worst of times and still know joy in the middle of our grief. So are you basing your joy on your happiness, or are you basing your happiness on your joy? Let me tell you about Demosi. President of World Vision was reflecting on his visit to a church in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, about a year after the earthquake. And the church's building at that time consisted of a tent made with just tarps and duct tape, pitched in the midst of a sprawling camp of thousands of people still homeless from the earthquake. This is how he describes the church and the lesson he learned in Haiti. In the front row sat 6 amputees ranging from the age of 60, from 6 to 60. They were clapping and smiling, and as they sang song after song and lifted their prayers to God. The worship was full of hope and with thanksgiving to the Lord. And no one was singing louder or praying more fervently than Demosi, a 32-year-old unemployed single mother of 2. See, during the earthquake, a collapsed building crushed her right arm and left leg. And after 4 days, both limbs had to be amputated. She was leading the choir, leading prayers, standing on her false leg and lifting her one hand high in praise to God. Following the service, I met Demosi's 2 daughters, aged 8 and 10. The 3 of them now live in a tent 5 feet tall and perhaps 8 feet wide. Despite losing her job, her home, and 2 limbs, she, listen to this, she was deeply grateful because God spared her life on January the 12th. He brought me back like Lazarus, giving me the gift of life, said Demosi. She believes she survived the devastating quake for 2 reasons, to raise her girls and to serve the Lord for a few more years. See, her happiness was not based on her circumstances. It was based on her joy of relationship with Jesus, the joy of her salvation, both physically and spiritually. Her joy was based on being in relationship, knowing that she was loved, and being accepted. I'd love for the worship team just to come back. In a moment, as I said earlier, I'm going to give people an opportunity to restore created order. You see, as I said, we were created to be in relationship with God. You may never have been in relationship with God before, but you're going to have an opportunity to step back into what we were created for. Or maybe you're here and you've had a relationship with God before, but like the prodigal son, you know that story because as soon as I mentioned it, something in you went, yeah, that's me. It's almost like you've grabbed what you could and you've run away. And I'm going to give you an opportunity to step back into relationship with God. But I don't know how you do it here, and I imagine it's very similar to the way we do it, but after we've prayed a prayer, we always celebrate. It's a habit that we have. We clap, we shout, we dance, we maybe not dance, but we celebrate. And we celebrate because I never, ever want to lose the fact that we have the joy of our salvation. Of someone saying, God, I don't know you, but I want to know you. I've never stepped into your life, but I want to give you my life. For some of you, that might be, well, we don't clap. Well, it's about time you learned how to. Because it says that When Jesus tells the story of the lost, it says that all heaven celebrates when the one that was lost is found. And my warning to all of us is to never allow sin, time, or entitlement to diminish our joy. We need to celebrate every win. Let's be a church here in Valley Church, whether you're in Whitley, Lancaster, the wrong colored rose. Let's be a church where, like Jesus, we're anointed with joy more than our companions, where we celebrate salvation, both yours and maybe your neighbor's, where we celebrate every salvation. Can I say, let's be a joyful church.
Thanks for listening to this week's message. Why not follow us on Twitter at @valley_church or come visit us at one of our locations on a Sunday. To find out more, visit valleychurch.eu. Have a great week.